Fang, vocalist for Lords of the Trident. Fang, thanks a lot for calling in for a live on-air interview. How's it going in Wisconsin? Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello! How's it going with you? It's my pleasure to be here tonight, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, and bonus points to those of you who know what Hello, Wisconsin means. Now, I'm sure you've probably heard that one enough over the years.
We've got that, you know, that's sort of a given, you know, because when we play in town, it's always Hello, Wisconsin, that kind of thing. So.
The new Lords of the Trident album is Frostburn. It's out now. Now, Fang, I've got to ask you, as this is an FM radio station that you're calling into, tell me how important, if at all, FM radio is to your band when much of the support for underground bands such as yourself, it comes from online, like purchasing digital albums, the online interviews that you do, social media interactions. So what does FM radio do, if anything, for an underground band like yourself?
You know, I have a soft spot for FM radio, me personally, because it, unbeknownst to many people, I sort of masqueraded as a mortal a radio host, and I did my own radio show for a while with a few other people, and you know, so for me personally, I really enjoy tuning into FM radio. You know, I rarely use my iPod or my CD player when I'm driving around in the big sort of Mad Max van mobile. You know, it's a lot [S2] Right. [S1] Of FM stuff. I like to get the local flavor. So for me personally, I really enjoy, you know, listening, calling in, and sort of getting the local personalities. I'd say in general, though, you know, if you look at the bands nowadays with the internet influence and things like that, I think a lot of people sort of discount the power of FM radio, of local radio, especially. When, you know, I think that's sort of a mistake by a lot of bands, because a lot of the people who are running these shows are, you know, the guys that are so, and gals, the guys and gals that are so very, very, very into the type of music, you know, and these guys will be your number one cheerleaders. You know, if they like you, they're going to let everybody know, they're going to let their listeners know. So, I, you know, for me, it's a very important thing. And I think anybody who says it's dead is underestimating a lot of the impact that it can make.
Well, first of all, thank you. I will take what you said personally. And I agree. And hey, and WSCA and many other radio stations, we stream live online. So it's not just a matter of it's just a regional thing. If you're streaming live online, it's like we say here at the station, it's not how far we reach, it's how close we reach. I mean, I've got regular listeners on every continent, and this is their station. It doesn't matter how far away they are. They stream online, or hey, they catch the podcast after the fact. FM radio, it's just as relevant as anything else. And you're right. I think a lot of bands discount that because it's not the 70s and 80s anymore, and everything is just this online push. And you're right that, and by the way, I didn't know you used to do a metal radio show. Is that something that you did on your own? Where, I mean, did you have your own gig that you had some co-host, or did you jump in with somebody else? How did that work?
Well, you know, I don't want to give away too much of it because it's sort of shrouded in mystery, but I will say it wasn't a metal radio show. It was something else. And I, you know, I don't want to give into too much of the details because people All right. may find it online and then they may skewer me and make memes and things like that. But yes, it was actually somewhat, I'll give a little clue. It was somewhat of a talk radio show.
Well, that narrows it down.
Exactly, right? There you go.
So, Lords of the Trident, you guys have some live dates coming up this summer. And as feedback on the new record, Frostburn, has been quite positive, perhaps you've noticed. And the band has been around for several years now. You've got three full-length records. You got a few EPs out. Let's go hypothetical here. If a support slot on a North American tour were offered to the band, is Lords of the Trident able to tour for like a month or more? Or can you only do those week long jaunts because of day jobs?
It would really depend on logistics. Me personally, absolutely 100%, I would love to do it. And you know, it would definitely depend on the band. You know, I mean, obviously, if Nickelback comes through and says, "Hey, you want to be on our month long tour?" Anybody would probably say no, obviously. But even if they shoved, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 in our faces, but. You know, for the right band, for the right time, the right area, I could definitely see us doing it. The thing is, you know, nowadays, and I'm sure you know, you've interviewed a lot of bands and you've probably heard this a lot, it's very difficult making a living and actually even just making money coming out of tour not broke. You know, it requires a certain finesse and a certain, you know, business acumen, if you will, to do all that. And so it's not that we don't want to be on the road and playing in front of people and pillaging and destroying and setting venues on fire every night of the week, because, I mean, that's heaven for me, personally. But, like, you know, it's a thing where you have to look at it and say, okay, are we going to be, you know, spending $10,000 and have absolutely nothing to show for it over and over again until we're, you know, trying to get the last hot dogs off of the rotisserie on the, you know, 7-Eleven and steal them while we, you know, while we create a diversion. It's that sort of a, you know, it's the give and take. It's the A and B kind of a thing. But yeah, absolutely. I'd love to do a long, long tour. That'd be great. In the meantime, though, we've been doing these, you know, we've sort of shifted our focus where instead of doing long, giant, you know, 2-3-4 week tours, we've been trying to focus into being like into an idea of being constantly on tour. So once a month, we'll pick a direction and we'll say like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, right? We'll drive as far as we can Thursday, play a show, stay the night, drive as far as we can Friday, stay in, then Saturday, and then we drive all the way back on Sunday. And, you know, looking at our ledgers and notebooks and Excel documents and all those sort of wonderful, very metal things that we carry along with us, it's really helped quite a bit because I'm sure any touring band out there will say the worst nights of the week to play are Sunday through Wednesday, and the best are, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You lose all your money Wednesday, Sunday through Wednesday. You make it all back Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So we're just kind of cutting out that Sunday through Wednesday for the most part. As you said, obviously we have a longer tour. We have our first international tour ever coming up here at the end of May, which we're very excited about, and that is a little bit of a longer tour.
So let's talk about the new album, Frostburn. My favorite tune on the record, after going through it so many times, Light This City. So tell us about the track, beyond the fact that it kicks ass. Tell us about Light This City.
You know, it's very interesting because everybody, it seems like, and I know, you know, this is obviously a good thing, but it seems like everybody has a different favorite track. I expect when somebody, you know, starts off with like, my favorite track is, I'm like, I know what he's going to, and then it's something, you know, right. It's a different track every single time. So Light This City was a song written and created by one of our guitarists, Asian Metal. And he sort of envisioned like, what would, you know, what would the perfect, like Tokyo street racing drag, you know, drag racing kind of a theme song be? You know, if we were going to go Fast and Furious 16, right? If we were going to have the soundtrack for the Fast and Furious 16, what would we do? What would it be? And so, you know, he and I sort of wrote that. He wrote the song. I wrote the lyrics. It's been a favorite of quite a few many people out there. We ended up making a music video for it. We used, for our CD release party, we had a number of cameras and things like that were recording the CD release party. And we ended up using that footage to create sort of a live, you know, a live music video version of Light This City. So it's definitely one of my favorites to play, one of my favorites off the album for sure.
Are there any complete or almost complete songs that didn't make the cut for Frostburn? Do you have anything lying around in the vault?
Yeah, we do actually. We had a number of songs that we had demoed out and we had almost done, you know, that we just sort of weren't. We weren't super impressed with in terms of, or, you know, maybe not impressed, but we didn't think it was ready, you know. And so we're currently trying to rework those songs, a few of them anyway. Some of them we've just sort of, you know, ditched, basically. For the new album that we're working on right now, we have, as of about a year ago, we have a brand new guitarist, Baron Torian Hellishar, who's joined us. Formerly of the band, this band signed to Century Media Records, Luna Mortis. He was the primary songwriter and lyric writer and all that sort of stuff from that band. So he's brought to the table quite a few amazing ideas. And right now, in terms of the new album that we're working on, we've got 3 to 4 songs completely demoed out, you know, with lyrics and things like that. I'm hoping by the time tour comes around, we should have 1/2 to 3/4 of the album like written. And hopefully, you know, get back in the studio at the end of the year to record that guy.
Well, about time. It's been forever since the last record. Come on.
No, right? Well, hey, you know, we did release a free EP on Christmas, I will say. So, Yep. We're giving people little tastes here and there.
Yeah, you're quite prolific over the years. I will say that you got a great album cover for Frostburn. You know, it's very 90s power metal, but in a good way. It's something along the lines of something that Blind Guardian could have used when they were back when they were a speed metal band. Very killer album cover. Love that one.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We use the same artist for that album as we did for Plan of Attack. And, it's my hope that we continue to use him, until the end of time, essentially. I mean, this guy is absolutely incredible. He's a Greek artist. I'm going to butcher his name, Andreas Zafiratios, I believe his name is. Amazing, just absolutely amazing. And I don't know if you've worked with artists in the past. We've worked with quite a few. The one thing that really struck me about him, other than his art style, obviously, was the fact that this guy is like Johnny on the spot on email. You email him, you're like, hey, man, I need a, you have any other sketches ready? Maybe it's like 5 a.m. Greek time or something. I don't know. 45 minutes later, he's like, yeah, I'll get them to you in an hour. Wow. It doesn't really matter what time you email the dude. He's like amazing. So,
awesome.
Yeah, I hats goes off to him. Absolutely.
You also recently made available an EP called Requests, featuring a few cover tunes of some non-metal tunes. But what I want to know is, when do we get re-requests featuring covers of Russian folk metal and Australian black thrash? When are we getting re-requests? Come on, man. You got to make it happen.
The thing is that requests for your listeners out there who don't know, it's we had for Frostburn, obviously, we did a Kickstarter, which many bands do. And one of the pledge levels, it was a higher pledge level that we toyed around with, was make Lords of the Trident play anything you want, right? And so we originally intended to take these songs that people pledged and play them for people live, but we ended up having a bunch of pledges we had one from Seattle, one from Alaska, one from New Mexico, and all, although these are all places that we're planning on getting to eventually, well, Alaska, maybe yes, maybe no, but we didn't have any tour plans anytime soon, and so we thought, this is sort of a disservice to these people who are pledging this much money to do this. So we ended up recording them, and I have a feeling that we're going to be doing this again, probably for the next album's Kickstarter. So if you want re-requests,
yes.
Pledge that level and have us play something really weird and like super duper deep cut, and we'll do it, man.
Awesome. And again, Russian folk metal, Australian black thrash, there you go. the groundwork is laid. You don't need to do any more Beyonce covers. We got that, okay, fine, and that was fun. It was cool, but let's do some more obscure metal. How about that?
It's out of the system now. It was one of those things that we thought either people are going to give us like the hardest metal songs ever, or they're going to just give us like the stupidest pop songs,
Of course.
And so we had one that was a straight up, good power metal song. It was the Mago de Oz, La Conquista.
Right. Yep.
That was really, really fun to do. And then the rest of them were like, all right. The Beyonce song was the hardest, I will say, because if you listen to the original version, it's all it is it's drum and bass and her singing. There's no music whatsoever. So it's like, how do we do that? So we ended up having to come up with, how do you approach a song that's just drum and bass, and make it into a metal tune? So obviously we ended up going with the djent style of things. So
you made a big mistake. What you should have focused on is, how do I look like her? Never mind.
I would have to lose a lot of weight. And
or maybe gain a lot of weight in certain areas. Anyway.
Except for in the butt.
On your website's merch page, you guys are selling scratch and dent t-shirts, which I think is a great idea. So explain that. That's a great idea.
Well, so all of our merch, pretty much everything that we do, as a band nowadays, in order to stay financially solvent, everything that we do, everything that we make ourselves. We do all of our t-shirts ourselves. We make, 90% of the merch that you see on our table when we play live, we've made ourselves. Our blood, sweat, and tears have gone into this. And, of course, when we're making these t-shirts, we're printing, 40, 50 at a time, and we've got, a bunch of dudes in the basement just sort of printing away. And, so some beers will be had, and maybe
it sounds, it sounds really creepy. Dudes in the basement.
Right, I know, right?
Write a song about that.
If we ever quit the band and start a screen printing company, that should be it. It's like, hey, dudes in the basement production.
Pick up at our place, please. Oh, no.
Right. Come alone, no cops. So sometimes we have a few too many beers. Sometimes the ink gets splattered and prints don't go quite as well as they'd want. So, and sometimes I'm just sort of very, very nitpicky. You know, I'm a little anal retentive when it comes to the design. Oh, the sword doesn't look quite as good on this one as the other one. It didn't get enough ink or something like that. You know, then I will take that shirt, put it in the scratch and dent pile. And essentially what we do is we just sell them basically at cost. So if somebody wants a night shirt or a shirt to work out in or something like that, but they still want to support, you know, their lords, they can do it that way.
Great idea. And but again, another missed opportunity. It could have been scratch and sniff t-shirts. Just saying.
Ooh, I think our sales would have gone down with that one.
I don't know, man. I'm sure there's a market out there. You know, you sell the clothes that you've worn on stage from a show, officially stage-worn show,
no,
scratch and sniff.
Nobody wants that. You have no idea. Leather does not breathe, and it is like a swamp, man. You do not want that.
And you tend to be if I'm not mistaken, you are the one who does pretty much all the interviews for the band. And I guess you're kind of like, I don't want to say the David Lee Roth. Maybe I do want to say you're the David Lee Roth of the band. Can there be a Lords of the Trident without Fang in the band? Or are you replaceable, like apparently Paul Stanley of Kiss is replaceable?
I think we've had this discussion quite a few times. And I would have to say that probably there wouldn't be Lords of the Trident, you know, without me. And I think it's not because of, you know, not that I don't like to toot my own horn or anything like that. I mean, who doesn't? But it's not because of, like, you know, no one could sing the notes that I could do. And that, you know, no one could write the lyrics. Not like that. You know, it's really that I'm not only the guy that is the front man, but I do also all of the behind the scenes stuff. You know, I make the t-shirt designs, I do the flyers, I print, I do the booking, I do the managing, I do the website. You know, I mean, if you look, I do all the video. I do all the video editing, I do pretty much everything. So more or less, if you see something that the Lords of the Trident have created that is not directly musical, you know, then I probably have my hand in it. And a lot of the guys, you know, they've been very forthcoming with me, you know, saying like, you know, we're just incredibly grateful that you do all of this sort of stuff. So you know, it's a labor of love. And I just don't know if any of the other guys would want to do all of the extra crap that I do, to be perfectly honest.
You know, it's okay to admit and just say those guys are a bunch of hacks. They just sit around in the basement drinking beer and don't contribute.
Exactly. They couldn't be them without me.
Hey, you could be the Gene Simmons of the band, you know. Control everything. Try to drain every last cent out of everybody, even with the scratch and dent t-shirts.
The only problem is I don't have boots that go that high, so I wouldn't be able to, you know, not quite yet. I need higher boots.
Time to take the next step up, pun intended. You got to get there, dude.
Literally.
So, and actually, since I mentioned Kiss, what are the chances of seeing Lords of the Trident in concert and then you break into an old Kiss tune?
Oh, you know, that's a good question.
I think it's perfectly doable. I mean, you know, with your sound, I think you could make it happen.
I would not say no to that at all. It would have to be have to be sort of a special occasion, I think, and it'd have to be something that everybody would be down for. But I would do it.
Dude, you are Lords of the Trident. You just tell them what to do. I think we've established
right. Yeah,
that. Yeah,
I forgot about that. Just crack the whip, right?
Exactly, crack. Exactly. All right, we're up at the top of the hour. So go ahead and let's promote yourself. What are your sites, the contact info? How do people touch the Fang? Come on, let's hear it.
Hey, well, if you want to find Lords of the Trident online, the number one place to do it is www.lordsofthetrident.com. From there, you can find links to all of our social media, our Facebook, our Twitter, our YouTube. Heck, we're even on MySpace, which is sort of like the Constitution. Everybody knows
remember that.
There, but nobody ever looks at it. You know?
I definitely remember that one. You're on Twitter, you're on Facebook, you're on MySpace, you got a website. Anything else? I mean, if somebody goes and catches one of your shows at a club or something, you know, or is it okay if they jump on stage and bang heads with you? You know,
The more the merrier. You know, they obviously they run the risk of decapitation or being set on fire, but that's a risk that many people will take. So if that happens, hey man, Instagram it. You know, put it up and let's have a party.
Hey, if you're gonna go, that's the best way to go is the metal way. You know, getting hacked up at a metal show. Why not? Right?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna spin a couple cuts from Frostburn. Obviously, I'm gonna play "Light This City," my favorite tune, and I'm also gonna play "The Longest Journey." Before we part ways here, what can you tell us about "The Longest Journey"?
The Longest Journey. You know, we are sort of secret nerdy guys. I don't know if you've noticed at all, but
no.
One of our favorite things to do in the downtime, you know, as we're traveling from place to place, is play some video games. And so a lot of our songs, Longest Journey, Complete Control, Face of the Enemy, all sorts of different songs, are actually sort of secretly based off of, secretly or not so secretly, based off of video games that we've played in the past. So The Longest Journey is actually, you know, based off of the video game of the same name, The Longest Journey. And it was a PC adventure game that a number of us really enjoyed. So we decided, we had this song, you know, that we were playing. And one of the things that we do when we write songs in our practice space, you know, when we find something that really inspires us, is Asian Metal be like, quick, Fang, just read something that you have lying around and sing over it. And, you know, usually that's like a video game manual. So that's what I did with The Longest Journey, and that's how it became The Longest Journey. We ended up just writing about that.
Killer, man. Hey, Fang, thanks a lot. I really, really appreciate your time. The new album is Frostburn. Request is new. That's there. Check out the band if you can see them, if they come to a town near you. Check out all those websites. And we'll keep spinning Frostburn and all your other music. Fang, thanks a lot for your time, man. Have a good one.
Thank you very much for having me.
For your listening and pleasure, Brett, the vocalist of Van Late, is on the air right now. Hey, Brett, thanks a lot for calling into WSCA tonight.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate your time. Killer power speed metal band from Kansas City, and I got to tell you, the Royals are going to get destroyed against the Red Sox in the postseason. Let's just get that out of the way right now, okay? I want to point that out. All right.
Well, not so much into sports, but I think I'm supposed to be mad at you here. So,
yeah, I guess you're supposed to be, but hey, you guys have had your
time. I strongly disagree.
You know what? I'll have to have you on air, like say in October, when you guys have lost, and then we'll pick up the conversation from there.
Then we'll talk.
Yeah, then we'll talk. So Van Late has a new album out on Metalizer Records called Rage of the Gods. The previous album was Iron Age, released by Stormspell. So two labels, two records. Brett, when does Van Late start up its own record label and start making some real money in this industry? When do you do it? Come on. I mean, dude.
That's a good question. Do you have the answer?
No, but I do know this. Dude, these days, you could make tens of dollars. I mean, that's the way the industry is going.
we're in the double digits here.
Yeah. Well, easily. You know, it's 2016, and it's metal. Not much more to be had unless you're, I don't know, hell, Metallica. They're not even metal anymore, but whatever.
Right.
Now,
yeah, our thing, we've been going, really, the second album, we had a kind of a dual release, and we did it independently here in North America, and then Europe handling a second release over or Metalizer's handling a second release over in Europe.
And how are you feeling about dealing with a record label that's so very far away? I mean, is it good communication? Are they taking care of you, or do you have any idea what they're doing for the band?
Well, really, the whole goal of it was so that we can handle our own stuff here. And then over there, more or less, they're just there to kind of get our name out in a place that is a lot less accessible to us. So really, it's kind of a win-win in that we get to keep, you know, 100% of whatever we make off of our own sales, and then they kind of just do their own thing. Because really, for instance, the last album we did, Stormspell, and it was kind of a small distribution deal, and basically they'd press a certain amount of copies and sell them and we wouldn't see the money. So I mean, this way we press our own. We just put that you know, the first pressings, and then everything we sell we keep.
Seems to be a smart way to go, especially if you want to have any success over in Europe, why not let them handle it over there, right? You handle it here in your own country. It makes
sense.
That's
kind of what I'm thinking.
We're still kind of
navigating the whole, you know, business and distribution aspects of everything, but you know, we're finding our way, and I think this was the right move to make, you know, this time around.
So let's talk about the slab of speed and power that the new record Rage of the Gods is. And obviously, we've been playing it here on WSCA. I love the record. If I didn't, I wouldn't have you on the air.
That's great, man. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, Hail the Protector is a song that stands out for me probably the most of any of the tunes. And there's not a tune on the record I dislike, but Hail, I would say, is one that's probably my favorite. What's the inspiration behind that one?
That one's kind of been the crowd favorite as well, as far as it seems like that's kind of the de facto favorite song on the album for most people. Really, I think most of the songs we write are so fast. We kind of wanted a more anthemic sort of BO or like a more stomping Manowar kind of style song. And really, that's where that one came from. And then when we got in the studio and started laying it out with all the gang vocals and stuff, it started sounding really big. So we're really happy with the way it turned out.
Now, I don't take this too personally, but I really like the song Moonbound. And yeah, you know, it's an instrumental for the most part. And
I have some reverse satanic vocals.
Well, I was going to get to that. I'm thinking, you know, the song is, for the most part, it's instrumental. Yeah, I still think the band should play it live, you know, to give you a chance to, jump off stage and go to the bar and grab a PBR or something. You know, that's rock and roll, right?
That's my favorite part of the show.
But the backmasking at the end of the song, you know, is that your Ozzy and Priest influence coming out, you know, telling the kids, do it, get the gun, shoot, shoot, shoot?
Exactly. It's a satanic murder spell that I'm casting,
of course,
to get kids to shoot up schools.
Of course.
No, not really.
I mean, that's what metal does, right? Of course, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. It's something, weird chant that Zach wrote at the last minute and said, hey, put this in there. And I said, what if we do it backwards, you know? And I think it's a cool effect, and it's really kind of behind all the music, and it just sounds creepy.
So you're the devil worshiper in the band. I knew it. It figures. It's always the front man.
We all are, but I am, you know how it is.
Yep. And speaking of Ozzy and Priest, when seeing Van Laid live, what covers are you guys likely to rip into during your set?
We, for our last tour, we went to the West Coast and we did Kansas, Carry On Wayward Son.
All right.
Sort of being from Kansas was the idea, but we started playing it and it kind of fit, you know, like the song's already kind of heavy and you speed it up a little bit. And with like, you know, the heavy metal distortion, it actually works really well with our set.
I can understand.
So we had that.
I can understand that. I mean, Yngwie did a pretty killer version of it. So I've already heard like it metalized. So I can kind of hear Van Laid doing it. So yeah, I can hear that. Sure.
And we're all into, you know, like traditional metal and all that. But really, I think, at least for me personally, my first love was like 70s hard rock and progressive rock and stuff. Like Kansas is one of my all-time favorites. Rush. We've been talking about doing a Riot Thundersteel cover.
Ooh, okay.
But I think Zach's afraid of that on the guitars. Not that he couldn't pull it off, but I think it's just too much work for a cover at this point.
No, I understand. Good choice, though, for a good band. Oh, yeah. Great album, of course.
I think that album, Thundersteel, is probably our, like, de facto template that we work off of. And, of course, there's a lot of other influence going in there, but that's, like, our cornerstone.
That's a great choice. Great album. And I think fans of stuff like Priest's Painkiller, you know, if they haven't heard Thundersteel, I think they need to check that one out for sure. But it's good.
Yeah.
It's interesting to know that that's kind of like what you're saying is kind of like your template or blueprint in a way. It makes sense now that you say it. I would not have guessed that to begin with, but now I hear it. Now I definitely hear it.
Listen for, and I think you'll hear a lot of Thundersteel coming off.
You know, it's weird. I just mentioned Yngwie a second ago, and, you know, before I heard your song As Above, So Below, I was actually hoping it was an Yngwie cover, because he had a song called As Above, So Below on his first record in '84, and it's not, you know, but it is a killer song, because it's slow, it's mid-paced, it's fast, it's melodic, shredding.
Was that one of the two with vocals on it?
Yes, and this is, As Above, So Below, Jeff Scott Soto did two tracks with vocals. That's one of them, and the other one was Now Your Ships Are Burned. So
right. Yeah. I'm trying to remember how that one sounded.
It starts off with that organ solo before it kicks into the song, I Will Never Die, Because I Will Fly to the Sky. Yeah, you should go back and listen to that record. That's a fantastic record.
I love that song.
That's a great song, great, great, great album. But your As Above, So Below, it's kind of, to me, it seems like everything that Van Leet has done, you know, in your short span of a career is pretty much in that song. Like I was saying, it's slow, then it gets mid-paced, there's fast parts, melodic, obviously the shredding guitars are there. And I after I hear that song, I think, you know, if I ever told somebody, you know, if I met somebody at a show and I'm like, hey, check out this band Van Leet, I would say, listen to that song. And I kind of feel like that's like this is what people should listen to get a sense of what your band is all about. Do you agree with me on that one?
I could see that. I could definitely, because it does kind of have all the parts in one song there. Surprisingly, that one, when we wrote it, was pretty last minute. And we had only played it through a couple times together, and we kind of laid it out in the studio, and it came together really well. And I think it just, I don't know, when we start writing songs, we don't mean to do it a certain way. They just kind of fall into place. So this one ended up being like this 10-minute long, you know, mid-paced kind of epic song, and I think it turned out really well.
When you say you don't really intend to do something specific, I mean, are you saying you, whether individually or as a band, you are just jamming out, coming up with riffs and just develop them as you go along? Is that how it works for you?
Well, I think they start with kind of a basic idea, like let's do a really, like a fast speed metal kind of song or something, and then we'll kind of hash it out. Usually Zach will come in with the first riff that started off, and then next thing we know, we've got this like 8-minute song with a whole bridge section that's completely different, and so it kind of, it's kind of a team process, but we never really know what direction it's going to go until we're done with it. And then of course, laying it out in the studio and hearing it recorded always sounds a little bit different than you thought, but luckily for the Rage of the Gods, I think every song on there I'm really happy with.
And would you find obviously being with your status in the band, would you find that you would be okay with a song being released on an album if you felt like, you know, I'm not cool with that, but the other guys are, so I'll just go with it? Or you're the kind of guy that says, you know what, I'm putting my foot down, not going to happen.
I think I'd put my foot down. I don't know if it would get that far. You know, I think because when we write together, generally we all kind of put on our own 2 cents, so to speak. So I think if there was a part that one of us didn't like, it would be nixed before it got to the, you know, final product.
Has that happened before?
I'm trying to think. You know, when I first joined the band was around a couple years before me.
Mm-hmm.
When I first joined the band, there were several songs that we maybe played live once or twice. But when we started writing songs as a group together, we kind of nixed it out in favor of, you know, stronger material that we have that we wrote together. So that's the only real example I can think of. There was one song off Rage of the Gods that didn't make the cut, but only because the album was already an hour long, and it was kind of it would have been after As Above, So Below, and we thought that As Above, So Below would be kind of a perfect end point for it.
Do you think there is, whether for your band or any other metal band or any band for that matter, do you think there can be too much music on an album?
I think so. I mean, I think it needs to be succinct enough and exciting enough the whole way through to keep your attention. I know for me personally, a lot of albums I'll put on and kind of get to the second or third track, and then, you know, and it doesn't mean I don't like the album, but I may not, you know, I may have to go do something else, or I may just get tired of that album. So I think it's important to keep it kind of a brief package that you want to keep listening to, keep everything interesting, keep it kind of short. Maybe not short. I guess an hour-long album isn't really short, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think I do, but how do you feel about that in a live setting? Because when you were talking about this, I was thinking about, you know, I was playing a Creator track earlier in the program tonight, and Mila, who's the front man of the band, he has said for many, many years that Creator live sets don't work once they reach the 90-minute point. After 90 minutes, it's too much of the same thing, so they don't like to play it beyond 90 minutes. What about with your band, with your style of music? If you don't like albums to go past a certain point, what about live settings? I mean, do you think you're a band that's like 1 hour and done? Do you want to play as long as you can or until you get tired? What about in a live setting?
You know, I think the longest set that we have had the opportunity to play was the Rage of the Gods release show, where we just played Rage of the Gods all the way through. So that was, you know, more or less an hour long. Past that, I think it kind of depends on if you're Iron Maiden and if you have 200 different songs that people are going to be there to stay to hear, or if you're, I don't know. I mean, it really just depends, I guess. Like, I saw Manowar once, and they played for like an hour and a half or a little bit longer, and I was interested the whole time because they were skilled enough to really stay strong to the very end. So, I mean, and I guess their material is varied enough. They have a lot of fast songs, a lot of slow songs. So I think, I guess it kind of just depends. I could see myself getting tired with certain bands after, you know, if they, like, I think I saw Aerosmith and Motley Crue, and Aerosmith played, like, you know, an hour, and after a while, it's like, okay, I get it.
You know, you mentioned Manowar live. I've only managed to see them live once, and I think they did about a 90-minute set, but the thing was, half of that set was Joey ranting about this and that and the other. It's like, oh, my God. I mean, it was entertaining, but at the same time, it's like, think about all those songs that they could have put in there instead. But, I get it's part of the set. You know, it's what they do.
Yeah, I think that's part of their charm, is that they're just kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Joey's a very assertive personality.
Yeah, you could say that.
And I think it's fun to watch. Donald Trump rally. You just kind of like,
oh man,
this guy's crazy.
Joey and Donald in the same sentence. That's awesome. And there's got to be a headline in there somewhere. That's great.
I can see it. Or Gene Simmons.
Oh,
Gene Simmons
kind
of does the same thing live. And when I saw Manowar first, and I saw Kiss a couple years later, and I was like, this is a Manowar show times 100. Like, they kind of have the same presence almost. And then you have the bass player leader guy who's kind of a cocky, you know, I could see a lot of Kiss in Manowar.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. An assault of the senses in every way with those two bands. And speaking of bands and touring, I'm going to throw a little something off speed for you here. Name me one non-metal band. They obviously sounds nothing like Van Laid, but you yourself would want your band to tour with.
That's a good question. Does Rush count? Is Rush non-metal?
Yes. I those in Canada would disagree with me, but yeah, I'm one of those. Rush is not metal, so yeah.
If we're saying Rush is not metal, then I would pick Rush in a heartbeat. Rush is probably my all-time favorite.
All right, so, you know, go ahead, keep going.
I'd say them or Van Halen.
Nice choice. And you mentioned you like the 70s stuff, and I'm guessing you like Roth Halen over Van Hagar.
You know, it's a close race, but I would pick Roth. I'm a Van Hagar fan. I'm not ashamed of that.
Yeah, I'm not either. I agree with you. I like them both. I think it's silly to like one but not the other. I mean, they don't really, well, they don't sound the same, so I guess you could say it's just not my style, the more pop
radio. I think they fueled that themselves, though, with their feuding.
Oh, yeah, with, Eat 'em and Smile, and then they put in Van Halen, puts out OU812.
Right, they made it so you kind of, you had to pick.
Right. Well, yeah, but they don't sound too much the same to me anyway. I mean, regardless of Eddie's playing, because Van Hagar was just so much more radio-friendly and melodic, and it wasn't the same to me. But
I agree.
But they're both good. They're both good, you know.
I'd say the song, like, the structures are better in Van Hagar.
I would agree with you there, too.
On the first few albums, it was kind of just shredding and, you know, it was craziness. And their first album is my favorite by far, so there's nothing wrong with that, but I think there was a lot more, like, I don't know, mature songwriting maybe going on later.
No, I hear you. I hear you. I agree. I mean, but I think you can definitely tell a difference in songwriting if you listen to, say, OU812 or even 5150 as opposed to, say, Fair Warning. You know, obviously the difference is there. And it's not just Sammy either. It's obviously Eddie moving on. You know, going back to Rush, though, and I don't consider them to be a metal band, and some people do and some people don't. For those of us who are not Rush fans or, don't really look at them as being metal, what Rush album would you say, all right, metalheads, this is the album you need to check out?
2112. Easy.
And for explain why. For what reasons?
It's just, I don't know. Everything about it is just, it's heavy and it's technical, and his vocals just, he wails. I mean, I think that was the peak of their game. And I really like Farewell to Kings as well. I think it's a good continuation on 2112, but I think 2112 was, I don't want to say raw because it's not at all. It's really progressive, but I think that's when they really found their sound and got it, like captured it, you know, and they kind of progressed on from that. And they went kind of more eclectic in the 80s. And I like all their stuff, but 2112 is my favorite. And that one I think is the best for like Something for Nothing, for instance. That song, I think it's the last track, but it's like it starts acoustic and then it gets just super heavy.
All right, Metalheads, 2112. I guess I got to listen to it too. And of course, you're not the only one I've heard say 2112 is the Rush album to check out.
Never listened to 2112? Is that what I'm hearing?
I've heard parts, like the song you just mentioned, the closing cut. I don't recognize that song at all. I know I've heard this song, 2112, Side A, I guess you could say. But the whole thing, no. Nope. Sure haven't. And I'm just not a Rush fan. I appreciate them. I respect them more than I actually listen to them. So,
is it the vocals?
No, I mean, it's a hitter. You know, it's a mood thing with Getty's vocals. It's just that, you know, I'm not a big fan of their, for lack of a better term, pop radio hits. But then again, it's hit or miss. You know, some things I've heard, there have been a couple times where I've listened to that classic rock radio, if you want to call it that, years ago. And this has happened a couple different times where I'm listening to something. I mean, damn, this is awesome. And then the vocals kick in. I'm like, oh, it's Rush. And I didn't know it was Rush until I heard Getty's vocals.
They've been around for so long, they've kind of touched on anything you could want to hear. So that's kind of cool about them. But yeah, definitely 2112 and Farewell to King, if you haven't heard that either.
All right, so let's, this isn't controversial, but I'm gonna test you here on these. I'm going to rattle off a couple names, and I want you to choose your favorite of the two, all right?
Okay.
Maybe it'll be easy, maybe it won't, but I think these are difficult for me to answer anyway. All right, so your favorite of the two. All right, Merciful Fate or King Diamond?
Merciful Fate.
I agree. Why?
I think, why? I don't know why.
I love them both, but I go for
Merciful
Fate.
Both, too.
Yeah.
I think King Diamond was a little too, I don't know.
Theatrical. Yeah, there we go.
And he'll do the different voices, and he always did different style of singing, but this would, he'd be like talking to himself, and there's, you know, it's still pretty cool, but I like more straightforward, at least in his case, I like it more straightforward, just about Satan and witches and stuff.
Yeah, I think this is not to be taken literally, but it's like, if like Merciful Fate, you could say is thrash, and King Diamond is power. They're not either thrash or power, but I'm just saying to differentiate the two, I mean, they're similar, but they're not the same. And but I agree
I
with it. Merciful Fate, they're a little more straight ahead, a little more aggressive, whereas King, because of it being so theatrical, and I love both. But yeah, I agree. Merciful Fate. All right, so here's another tough one. Venom or Bathory?
Venom.
Ooh,
I mostly say that because I have like Bloodfire Death, and I've heard some of their later stuff. Too keen on Bathory, but I do like it.
Yeah, I definitely choose Bathory, but both are fantastic.
Yeah, Venom. Also, I love Venom, but they're not one of my favorites. I think they're, I don't know, I think they were massively influential. I think the music's good. But it's just kind of like sloppy, almost punkish, but I do like what they did.
And actually,
I like what they stood for. I like the, like, shock rock to the max.
I agree. And actually, Bathory was kind of similar. You know, Bathory, especially the first record, was kind of like Venom and Motorhead mixed. You know, you put those in a blender, you pour it out the first Bathory record. It was sloppy, but it had the attitude. It was metal. It was great. And then he moved on a little more into the satanic black metal stuff before.
Yeah.
You know, the record you have, Bloodfire Death, where they started to move
like
on.
Hammerheart or something.
Yep.
Is that?
Yep. That's their first full on Viking record right after Bloodfire Death. Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought the music was pretty cool, and then he sings really out of key, which kind of caught me off guard.
Quorthon was the first to admit he was never a great singer, but it was his band, so he just kind of had to be the one.
Right.
But yeah, he was never a great singer.
He obviously did, you know, he was a success, so who am I to judge?
All right, so a couple other ones, and these next three are not going to be easy. All right, classic German thrash or Bay Area thrash?
Bay Area. I'd say that because, why do I say that? I think I just overall, I like the bands better. I think like early Metallica is probably my favorite thrash. Does Megadeth count as Bay Area?
Sure. Why not?
They were
not
from like LA, right?
Yes. Yeah. I think they're somewhere in the Los Angeles area. So yeah, but yeah, close enough. I mean, sure. I mean, Slayer was from LA, so yeah. I should have said California thrash. How about that? But yeah, okay, all right. And that one's tough for me, man. That's a tough call.
It might seem posery of me, but I just Metallica and Megadeth, like their early days, was, I think, untoppable.
No, man, that's not posery at all. And in fact, you know, some people don't hear it, but I hear Venom in that first Megadeth record. I do. And
I can hear that.
Yeah. For sure, not so much. A little bit in the second record, but certainly in the first record, because "Killing Is My Business" fantastic.
I like
record,
how
for sure.
Off the Wall, "Killing Is My Business." Just all those riffs are like, whoa! How do you think of that? How do you even play that? Let alone play it and sing at the same time.
Megadeth, specifically the first couple of records, it was just so different than the other bands. You know, the other bands were a little more straight ahead riffy, whereas Megadeth was kind of all over the place. It's almost like you could hear the heroin they were on. I mean, it was just so all over the place.
You can taste the heroin.
All right. Okay, final two. These are not easy. Ozzy Sabbath or Dio Sabbath?
Dio Sabbath.
I agree.
That was easy.
Absolutely.
Super easy.
Absolutely.
I love Dio Sabbath. Again, all these I love, but I love Ozzy Sabbath. Dio is just my idol. You know what I mean? I'd say Dio is the reason that I do what I do.
And I've been on air, and I've said before, I mean, part of why I've been a metalhead since the old day, well, it started with Kiss in the 70s for me, but really metal in the 80s, and even why I'm on the radio, I mean, I can trace it back to Dio. You know, those first couple of records, the solo records, and then that's when I discovered Rainbow, and then his time with Sabbath. Dio, absolutely. And, I mean, come on, Heaven and Hell and The Mob Rules, and then you kind of compare it against some of those Aussie records. It's like, yeah, no.
Right. There were some duds in the Ozzy Sabbath catalog, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I am one of those that, I like Master of Reality, it's like, you know that record? It's got some classics, but I don't like it. Yeah, but totally agree. Horns up on Dio Sabbath. All right, this is the most...
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Let's say when I was a kid was when Ozzy was doing his reality show stuff, so that's what I know, like what I originally knew Ozzy Osbourne from was like...
Oh, okay.
So when I don't know. So I've kind of always been familiar with Black Sabbath to some extent, but I didn't really fall in love with heavy metal until I heard Dio. And I was like, okay, this is, you know, and Heaven and Hell and Mob Rules are just like all-time classics.
Absolutely. It's 45 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking with Brett, vocalist of Van Lade, and I'm about to pose the most difficult question of all time. You ready for this one?
I think so.
Maiden or Priest? See how there's a pause and you didn't come right out with an answer? It's the toughest one of all, man.
Years ago, I would have said Priest. I'm leaning towards Maiden right now. I think it's back and forth for me, though.
I think it's back and forth for everyone because any day I could say one or the other. I just can't pick one. It's tough.
I'd say for consistency, Iron Maiden, for their early years, and Painkiller, Priest. I'd say Priest. I'm going to go with Priest.
All right. Favorite Priest album?
Stained Glass.
Ooh, good choice. Oh,
yeah,
man, great choice.
They just sounded so much more evil, I think.
Saints in Hell?
Back in the 70s days.
I mean, Saints in Hell, just one of the best vocal performances ever. One of my absolute favorite Priest songs, and good choice. Now, okay, all right, how about what's your favorite Maiden record?
Maybe Somewhere in Time.
Yes, that's my favorite.
Kind of a weird one.
Yes, no, that is my favorite. That is my favorite Maiden album of all time, by far.
That's the one I find myself just really replaying.
Yep, me too. Absolutely. If I need a Maiden fix, I always go to Somewhere in Time first. It's got every. There's not a bad song on the record. Even the quote unquote bad songs are great. I mean,
I agree.
I take that over Number of the Beast any day, or you know, the Deano albums. I mean, I love all the quote unquote classic Maiden albums, but Somewhere in Time. Oh yeah, good choice, man. Good choice. So, do you think Van Lade would ever do a full on covers album of all the favorites of the band members?
You know, that's, and it's still, we're in the brainstorming process, but we're talking about doing covers EP next thing, kind of in between our second and third album.
Are we talking like a 2016 release?
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We're going on tour this fall, so we're hoping to have like an EP or even like a mini LP of just covers, something to hand out pretty much. So yeah, I would say expect something like that.
And since you've not gotten to that point yet, I guess it's too soon to say what you might be covering. I mean, do you have something in mind? A couple that you would like to do on there that isn't Rush? Something else? I mean, do you have something else?
I could say there will be a Rush song on it.
Yeah, okay.
But I don't know. It started out kind of talking about, say, each one of us picked a song, and somehow it all ended up being like classic rock songs, and then that's kind of just the direction we took it.
Hmm.
So I think it's going to be mostly, I'll tell you, last practice we started jamming Barracuda.
Oh, okay.
And I told you we've been doing Carry On Wayward Son.
Mm-hmm.
I won't let us release it without a Rush song on it.
Putting your foot down again.
There's three right there, and that's all I can divulge at this point.
No, you got to do a Kiss song. Just, you got to do it.
You know, we wanted to, and then Vince, our guitar player, he was saying we should do I Was Made for Loving You.
Oh, I love it.
I was like, get out of here with that. That's the worst idea I've ever heard.
Oh, it's a great song. Oh, it's a great song.
And he was dead set. I almost quit the band.
All right, I'll tell you what. If you're talking about the original version on Dynasty in 79, yeah, it's a rock disco tune. Do me a favor. Give it a second chance. Listen to the version on Alive 3. It's much more of a hard rock tune. I think you will view the song differently. The hard rock quality, but yet keeping the catchy melodies are there and really come through. Listen to the version on Alive 3, and I think you might change your mind. Give it a chance.
Okay, I'll try it. I don't know if you're going to sell me, but I'll try it. It's not even that I hate that song, but I don't have to like the sing-songy falsettos and the, I don't know. And he was like, no, we can change it into like a metal song. I was like, I don't think so.
Well, hey, there's plenty of other Kiss tunes to choose from, that's for sure. I mean, you know, maybe even something faster like Deuce. Their live version on Alive was awesome, or Parasite would be killer too. So you were mentioning going on tour. Tell us about the tour details, like some dates and date range and where you're headed and what can we expect?
Sure. All that we have set in stone right now is October 7th. It's the Frost and Fire Festival.
Oh, yeah. Great lineup on that one.
Yeah, we're really excited about that. And that's going to be the grand return of Sirith Ungol and tons of really great bands from all over the country.
Oh, great
lineup.
So
we're really excited about that one.
Yeah.
And so really, it's going to be essentially from Kansas City, that direction, and then back. We're probably in 2 or 3 weeks. And there's nothing else booked, so I don't want to, you know, I don't want to give any details away of what we're working on, just in case, you know.
So those of us here in New England, we're not going to get any, well, no Van Lade for us.
Not this time.
That's
the thing. We went West Coast last year, so this year we were planning on doing East Coast, and then we got invited on that festival. So we're like, you know, we might as well double up that way.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes total sense.
Absolutely. But I can promise you the next thing we do will be going.
And hey, if you make it up to this area, gotta have you in the studio. You know, we'll put you on air. Maybe do a live performance here at the station. Why not? What the hell?
We would love to.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be awesome.
Let's promote what you're doing. Tell us your sites, your contact info, all that information.
Sure, you can find us. Our kind of main hub of activity is our Facebook. Facebook.com/VanLade, VanLade. That's where you can follow us. You can contact us, all that. And then you could check out our music on Bandcamp, which is just vanlade.bandcamp.com. And we have both of our first two albums up there for free streaming. And then you can purchase digital copies. You can also go to, we have Rage of the Gods available on CD Baby here in North America. And if anyone in Europe is listening by any chance, you can go to Metalizer, the Metalizer Records web store, and you can find it there.
And we definitely do. Black Knight Meditations. I've got listeners on every continent, Oh, I mean, everywhere from Egypt to, I mean, you pick a country. I've got somebody I've heard from, lots of listeners, and our biggest, more so than my own neck of the woods here in New England, I've got more listeners in Europe than anywhere. So definitely, we stream live online. I put this up on my website, blacknightmeditations.com, after the fact, so you're going to get a lot of mileage out of this one. And, you know, Brett, thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate it. I'm going to spin a couple tunes from Rage of the Gods, the ones we talked about, my favorites, As Above, So Below, and Hail the Protector. And hopefully we'll see you on the East Coast soon, man. Brett, thanks a lot for your time. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care. Have a good night.
Yep. You too, man.
Our souls will shout indeed. And let's see if we can get some Corners of Sanctuary souls to shout. Guys, you with me this time?
Yes, we are.
There we go. Yay! The wonders of technology. We finally have you on air. Corners of Sanctuary. Metal Machine is the new record. And those of you who listen to Black Name Meditations every week, you know I've been spinning Corners of Sanctuary quite a bit over the years because these guys are a little bit prolific. In the last, I don't know, 5 or so years, they've released 37 albums. It seems like there's always something coming out. I mean, God, full lengths, EPs, there's Christmas music, there are tribute albums like Barry Manilow and REO Speedwagon. You guys have a lot to say, apparently. Why are you so prolific? Why are you the anti-Def Leppard?
You know, I'm honestly, like, we're, in a sense, we're actually bashed about that all the time. We don't quite get it. It's just... I mean, we like to write. We like to, you know, we like to kind of work on our craft, and we enjoy it. So we just keep working at it. I mean, if you look at some things today, like how they want like indie artists or new and upcoming artists to they want you to do away with the album. They want you to release a single and video every month, you know, and talk to your fans and stuff like that. It keeps you relevant. It keeps you engaged, both as a working artist and your connection with the fans. So I don't see why that's, for some people, actually, it seems to be a problem, but we just look at it as like, hey, we're doing what we like to do and having fun with it. So, I mean, it's no different than what, like, Kiss did back in their day.
Exactly.
I mean, they had an album out every 6 months.
Two a year. So, yeah, I don't think it's so much of a problem. It's just a surprise. I mean, again, like you were saying, with the way the industry has gone with releases, it's focused on a single, a video release, like a lyric video, put out an EP instead of a full length, and then you've got your band putting out full lengths and EPs, quite prolific. It seems to be backwards, like truly old school, much like your music. You know, it's just shocking that bands are still doing this. Now, I should point out, since I've got two of you on air, give us your names and each one of you give us an example of why you are the leader in the band and what you say goes.
Go ahead, James.
I got to go first, huh?
Yeah.
I am James Parra. I play bass. And I guess what I contribute to the band is, you know, I'm the guy that's called out front when there's an issue, normally with a club owner, venue, radio, internet.
You're the muscle.
I wouldn't call me the muscle. I guess I could talk us out of trouble.
He's the mouth of the South.
Jimmy Hart. All right, mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So Mick, are you like the guy in the band? What you say goes. Are you going to take that role?
Yeah, pretty much. As long as Mick approves it.
So, yeah. Mick, would you say
I'm Mick Michaels, and I play
guitarist
guitar.
Extraordinaire, yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know about extraordinaire, but and I play Flock of Seagull-type keyboards on all the recordings.
For the record, I'm a Flock of Seagulls fan. I still listen to their music.
So,
I was a fan back then, and I still am. Just pointing that out.
So am I. I enjoy their stuff very much so.
Modern Love is Automatic is one of my favorite songs.
Posters of Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah.
You know, we got T-shirts, you know.
Hey,
if anyone's interested, we'll sell you a Corners of Sanctuary / Flock of Seagulls T-shirt.
Well, I mean, think about it. All these full links and EPs and these tribute, right? You got to do your new wave tribute album. You haven't done that one yet.
Yeah, right.
There you go.
We just got it. We have to find some hairspray that can hold some stuff up.
Well, I need more than hairspray.
Oh, okay. Let's move on from that one. So the new album is, oh God. Well, it's late at night. It's come to that. The new album is Metal Machine. No, it's not an homage to Udo Dirkschneider or Arnold Schwarzenegger, but it is a mid-paced. It's a riff-laden romp through, I would say, blue-collar, beer-drinking, leather jacket-infested heavy metal. So let's talk Metal Machine. You know, something that Corners has done these song intros and outros on albums before, and you've done it again on the new record. The instrumental outro track on the new record, Killswitch, it's actually, for me, the catchiest part of the record. I'm wondering if this one was composed solely as the outro of the record, or was it like one of those times where you had a riff and it just never got developed into a full song?
Well, we do the intro outro things. It's something that we kind of grew up with. It was always something that we did, and so we wanted to, you know, keep that as something that Corners of Sanctuary did. With Killswitch, we wanted to have an outro, and it kind of just, Sean, our drummer, he actually wanted to hold off on putting it on the album because he says, let's develop that into a much longer song. And we were like debating back and forth, and then it just, you know, we kind of passed on it and we put it there. So I don't think it was something that it wasn't supposed to be a larger song, but it started to feel like that. But then I think we pulled the plug on it and then just said, oh, this is how it goes. So then we'll hopefully our goal would be to pick up where that left off with the next album.
Do you find that many of your songs are born from a riff you just happen to come up with and it just goes from there?
Yes.
Sometimes, I guess. I mean, you have your guitar and you're jamming around, coming up with riffs, and you're like, "Ooh, that sounds pretty good." And then you just add to it, and before you know it, you've got yourself the skeleton of a tune.
I would agree, absolutely. Yeah, I would say a good portion of the time we come to the table like that when the writing sessions start happening, but there's a percentage of songs that kind of happen in between as we're rehearsing the set. So, you know, someone's kind of fooling around or something like that. And then we just kind of all kind of pick up on it and then we see where it takes us. Actually, one of those songs that kind of fell that way was from our last album, Axe to Grind, On the Hunt. It was just a song we were like, actually just something we were noodling around in between rehearsing the set. You know, sometimes you get, like, here we got to go do the set again. So then you kind of fool around, and then you know.
Well, speaking of fooling around, and this is somewhat on a related note, Mick, I think it was you that stated once that your songs can evolve from what's recorded to the live performance. So I'm wondering, is that due to your style of playing live, or do you use the live setting to try new things with your songs? Or is it a little bit of both, or is it one or the other?
What was the question again? I'm sorry.
Like, you've stated that your songs can evolve from what we hear on the album to what is actually performed live. So is it a case of style of playing live, or okay, we're playing live, we just want to do it differently? You know, is it a little bit of both? Is it one or the other? You know, is it style, or is it something you try to do different?
Well, I think from a live perspective, I think we come across a little bit heavier and more like kind of simple. I don't know if that's the right word, but simplified. We are, you know, we're a little rawer, if that's a word, I guess. And our fans kind of dig it, and a lot of that's intentional. A lot of that was something we decided early on, but a lot of that is because we have a single guitar player, right? So the songs as they are recorded, they change a little bit. And when we play them live, they don't change, but they come across a little heavier, a little more in your face. And we get that. We often, after our gigs, we get, hey, you guys are a lot heavier live. Now, I that's just the way it comes across, and we dig it. And I think with Axe to Grind and with Metal Machine, we tried to put some of that in those last two albums.
Well, is it I've been talking about, actually, it seems like I've been talking about Kiss a lot tonight. But is it a case of like Kiss in the, with their specifically first three records, where they sounded like one thing on record, sounded like another thing on in concert, and they just couldn't capture that live sound on the records? Is that what's happening with you guys? Is that the live sound doesn't translate to the recorded material, or do you purposely go for a certain sound recorded versus what you're doing live?
I think that we're going for we're definitely going for a certain sound live, and there's a certain sound that's being recorded. And what's funny is there was a review that we just received out of Germany or somewhere, and it sounded like something they had said that our latest album sounded like it was a live recorded album rather than a studio album. So it's kind of funny that you say that, but when we write. And then we go into the studio, we usually write with several guitar parts in mind. So we look at the studio, the recorded medium as one aspect of the song. So you'll have a couple guitar parts and you'll have it kind of interlaid with some melodies and maybe some cross rhythms and so on and so forth. Same with some of the vocals. But then when we go live, and like James was saying, we decided early on we wanted to be a stripped down version of that to create a different experience, which then we can focus on certain spots of the song and bring those spots out, and we have a much rawer type of approach. So a lot of that's, it really is calculated. It's not that I don't think that we can't capture our live sound recorded.
Or vice versa.
Yeah, we weren't really, that's not what we were going for, at least with the first two albums. But when we were touring for Harlequin, our second album, we kept hearing that over and over again. Oh, you guys are much heavier live. So when we went into the studio to, do Axe to Grind, we said, well, let's see what we could do to make more of that live aspect in the recorded. And I think it had something to do with the way that we recorded the rhythms and stuff like that. And
yeah,
we wanted to continue that and maybe see if we can expand on it some more with Metal Machine.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if when you're saying you're trying to capture that live sound more on record, for those of us who don't record music and we're not engineers, producers, how much of that is turning knobs versus performance in the studio in order to get that live sound? What did you do to try to capture that in the studio, that live sound? Or is it literally turning some knobs on the board or how you perform it? I mean, how does that work?
I from my perspective, and I'm not the engineer, but from my perspective, it's the rhythm tracks, the guitar tracks, and the vocals. The bass is the bass, right? The drums are the drums. They don't change too much from recorded to live. Really at all. It's, I think it's the guitar parts, right? You kind of simplify the root of the stick to kind of the heaviness, right? So some of the guitar parts are heavy. And then as Mick stated, then there's some accent guitar parts. So a little bit less of that and more of the root rhythm. I guess that's the way of saying it, Mick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And frankly, playing live, it's because we have in other bands tried to capture. There was a philosophy we had at one point that whatever you put on the album, you had to play live. And with this band, we're like, well, we don't believe that anymore. And part of that is when you play live, you have different interactions with the crowd. I mean, you're entertaining, right? So what's entertaining to the ear and what's entertaining to the ears and the eyes are different. So, we want to be more engaged and, at least from my perspective, think less. a live performance.
I think I know what you're saying. Well, are there any songs on Metal Machine you feel just wouldn't work in a live setting then?
Well, it depends what we have. A deluxe version, and we have we have our German release. So I would say the deluxe. So I have to make sure I got this right, Mick. There's a song called Blood Quest that I don't think we could necessarily pull off as well live. Well, we haven't tried yet, but I think that would be a song. I mean, if you're forcing me to, you know,
I think with any, you know, again, bands that focus on the idea of doing an album, I think there's always songs that you feel for sure that will translate well live. And then there's always songs on an album that, you know, every artist has songs on an album that they've never played live. They may have a connection to them. They may be a special song. They may feel that they're some of the best songs they've done. However, they may not translate live because it's, like James was saying, we are entertaining at the same time, and you don't want to bore your audience, and you don't want to change the mood of you know, such an intense type of connection that you're having at that, you know, could be a 40-minute set, could be an hour set, whatever it is. And you don't want to alter that mood in a negative sense where people are all of a sudden leaving and going buying soda and pretzels.
Especially at the State Fair, I guess,
like they do, you know, when the clowns come on at Ringling Brothers with the hula hoops, and they go, ah, now's the best time, let me go get my soda. Before they come back with the guy that, you know, plays with the Tigers or something.
Yeah, when they clean up the animal poo, right? Everyone goes to get their...
For Metal Machine, I love the song, The Return, but I don't think that it would translate as well in a live setting in terms of keeping the energy going. Mm. It's just, you know, because sometimes the strength of an album or the strength of a song in an album has something to do with the song that comes before and the song that comes after. There's a, like the old school ways. I mean, songs were like, you know, placed. It was almost calculated where these songs would be and how they would fall and what order and stuff like that. And I realized that in today's digital age, that's not as important anymore, since people aren't downloading full albums. They're only picking singles and, you know, stuff like that. But that's kind of how sometimes we think about it. And then when we're putting together the live set, we think of it the same exact way. And then, as you mentioned, you know, as you asked earlier about how the songs change, I mean, the songs change because we change as well. You know, it's like, it's just because it's recorded doesn't mean that song just that, it, you know, it's done. It can't grow anymore. I mean, things change all the time. I mean, sometimes the way they're delivered in the vocals, or you're playing the riff a little bit, or you picked up the tempo. Because I know you know, Metal Machine, the title track, we're playing that in our set now. It's been included, but it's up tempo from what it is on the album. We just felt felt that, you know.
And there's parts, especially in the bass and even well guitar rhythm as well, with the bass and the drum, where, you know what, we're having fun up there, and sometimes you just kind of experiment a little bit on stage, and then it becomes part of the song.
Right.
Live. Again, we actually, when we were in Chicago, we had did a in-house radio interview with a couple other bands, and we had a little bit of a difference of opinion, and where they didn't play songs at all because they couldn't capture it exactly as they could off the album. And one of the members was steadfast to the point where he kind of got angry at us for, which is cool, whatever, when, you know, it wasn't, but it kind of got angry at the thought that we would actually play a song that wasn't identical to the way it was recorded. And we, like I said, in our younger days, so to speak, we kind of had that philosophy, but, you know, at this point, it's, we definitely don't have it, because there's definitely a different energy when you're playing live, right? And to Mick's point, without belaboring it, you know, sometimes things come up live and you just keep doing them. I mean, you see that now with bands playing live now. You know what I mean? You can almost
It's always been like that. I mean, there's extended parts, or there's shortened parts, or, you know, they do something, you know, again, I mean, you know, reference Kiss. I mean, you know, they did it. I mean, however you look at them today, that doesn't make a difference. But what they did in the past, I mean, that you know, you can't deny anything that they did.
I mean, you see it with leads all the time.
Oh, yeah, Jimmy Page never played the same thing twice.
You know, and what's interesting is a lot of times the crowd doesn't know. Sometimes the crowd doesn't even know that there's a change in the drum part or the, and these are minute little things, but they kind of get us off in a sense, like, because we're having fun up there, right? So me and Sean will tinker around with, you know, different little parts that really, in the overall scheme of the song, no one's going to notice, but we like it, so we do it. You know what I mean?
And if you're, and I'm thinking that if you're happy, it's going to translate into the performance. I mean, and no one wants to go to a metal show or any show for that matter, and looking at guys and people on stage going through the motions or, you know, just earning a paycheck and not enjoying what they do. Especially metal, we know when that happens. I mean, we're gonna know.
Right.
So totally understand. You know, it's listening to this conversation and, you know, talking about this, and it could be any number of reasons why a song may not necessarily translate live. Sometimes it's you just capture studio magic. It makes me think of a quote from Phil, the guitarist from Def Leppard, about the song "Foolin." We know that song, obviously, from Pyromania. Mm-hmm. It's one of their all time classics. His quote is "Beautifully recorded, crap live." And you know, it's those guys can do almost anything, and they don't even use re-recorded parts in their live set. And if any band could, they should be, but they don't, and they just can't pull it off. You know, sometimes it's simply a case of, damn, we nailed it in the studio and it just doesn't translate live. But I like the fact that you guys are saying you're willing to, even if it's just the minute things that the listeners won't notice but you guys will. I mean, you got to make yourselves happy too, you know. You got to have fun. And
yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're not looking to make a statement or anything about art, the art and music, but, you know, I mean, look at it this way. Can you imagine, like, you are up there to entertain, right? So could you imagine, and this is probably a super bad example, but I'm going to throw it out there. Can you imagine sitting and watching just the members of Pink Floyd on a stage playing The Wall without the theatrics of the live show? Not in a million years, right? I mean, we'd all love it. But the whole point to that, right, is the theatrics behind the wall, behind the stage, behind the performance, right? If you just sat back and played some of those songs without the theatrics behind it, then what's the point, you know?
I hear you. And keeping with Metal Machine, being that we've been in the internet age for, I don't know, how many years now, 15 or so years, but beyond the internet, what avenues do you guys explore when promoting your releases? I mean, as we've said, you got a lot of them. Beyond just the usual standard social media, go to our website, buy the download, how else are you promoting? I mean, is FM radio, which is what you're on now, is that still a viable option for you? Do you go for that angle? What else do you do to promote your music?
Well, there is a lot of radio, whether it's internet or FM. It clearly, it's, as an independent band, it's the internet is radio is a godsend, right, for us, because you could reach all corners of the globe, right? So that would be one way. And you know, we do have some PR folks that work with this, and we're still doing some things old school where we're sending out press kits, promotion kits, marketing, email, although you could say that's electronic, obviously, but, you know, and word of mouth. And then the other piece of it is you want to try and get a group of, I don't know if this is the right word, but soldiers, so to speak, on the ground, you know, just promoting your band, word of mouth.
Yeah, and at least not forget, you got to get out there and play.
Yeah.
We try to stay out there, and we book a handful of shows every year, and we try to stay busy, and we try to stay, we're on the road. We do what we call mini excursion tours, being that we're just a little older, 4 or 5 days at a time is good enough for us. And
four or five nights in a row, and you get our best, but trying to pull off, and we've tried to do 7, 8 nights in a row, and it gets you start to not like what you're doing by the seventh night. You know what I mean?
All right. Well, All right, well, let's do some hypotheticals here based on what we're talking about. All right, Mick, being the guitarist extraordinaire, yeah, I'm going to go there. Let's say you get a call. Doro Pesch wants you as her fill-in guitarist for like a month-long European tour. I mean, do you take the gig?
I guess so. I don't know, to be honest with you. I can't really answer that. I was just the other day, somebody was looking for a guitar player to fill in for some shows in Canada and stuff like that. And, I said, I'll put the word out. My focus, and again, somebody's going to say, well, it depends on the money. It depends on that. And I don't know, maybe, but who knows? My focus is Corners of Sanctuary. And I'm obligated to that music in a positive way because I want to be. But I have a responsibility to it, but I also have a responsibility to the other four guys or the other three guys that are in the band. And I, you know, we have obligations that this band has to, you know, commitments that they have to make. And I don't know. Where was Doro Pesch, 25 years ago? That's basically, kind of saying. Slightly being a little older, I'm not afraid to kind of speak my mind so much. But I dig it. It's actually, I don't know if I jump for Doro Pesch, but if Judas Priest said, "Look, Richie's going to take 6 weeks off. Can you fill in and do a little KK?" And I'd be like, "Yeah, I'll give it a shot. You give me a Lion V."
So if it's big enough for you, yeah. You don't like your bandmates that much. You can, yeah. All right. Well, all right.
If an opportunity like that presents itself, we'd be complete a-holes if we didn't understand that one, right?
All right. Okay. let's do a little bit of a twist on this. Okay, it's going to make it a little more interesting. All right. Similar scenario, but the band. Think about this one first. The band is wanted for a 2-month American tour. Opening for Fall Out Boy. Do you take the gig?
Fall Out Boy? Well,
keeping in mind, hypothetical.
Hypothetical. Here's the thing. We would take it because it wouldn't really bother us so much. However, I'm not outside of maybe have things thrown at us or something. I don't know if it would hinder or, be a positive thing. Because I'm not sure if what we do would fit with the crowd that comes in. And that, so here, I'll give you an example. So when Corners of Sanctuary formed and we started, playing out, we were pretty much, the first year, pretty much every show, we were lumped in with death and thrash metal bands. And we don't have a problem with death and thrash metal bands. We're fans of it. However, that's not what our music necessarily translates to. And then of course the crowd doesn't always get it right away either. We're able to hold our own for sure. I'm confident in that. And we've always pulled it off. However, it's kind of like, sticking, Slayer with Kanye West on a world tour. Somebody may come back not in one piece.
I'm looking at their in case they're listening, they're playing Madison Square Gardens on March 4th. So I'm going to say we at least want to do that one.
Yeah. Like I said, we'll do it.
And the logic behind the question is not specifically Fall Out Boy in particular. It's just a name that I picked. Sure. But the idea is, again, going back to old school and 70s, and you guys are old enough, we remember that there were tours and festivals where it was a mixture of different styles of music, and these days, and even in metal, unfortunately, there are plenty of people in metal who, if they're going to see Dark Funeral, maybe they don't want to see Corners of Sanctuary. Granted, there are plenty of us who do, but there are people who like their little, well, no pun intended, corner of the metal realm, and they want to, that's what they want. So the idea is, okay, what about the way it used to be where you did get that mixture of different styles? For all we know, part of the logic also, I thought about Marilyn Manson, who chose Quiet Riot to do some live gigs with him because he was a fan. Of course, they sound nothing alike, and there could be the things like, are we going to have stuff thrown at us? Does this translate through where it's not the same? And Quiet Riot, Frankie, the drummer, said, you know, they jumped on it because how could you not, just because of the opportunity? So the idea is, you know, where do you draw the line? You know, is there a line for the band, or what the hell? Go for it.
I mean, we have Butcher Babies coming up March 11th, right? Some kind of contrasting styles there.
We just a wee bit.
Right in our sweet spot. Anvil right in our sweet spot. We have a Metal Fest coming up that we're across the board. So we're big believers in mixing up the music. I think there's two questions of really what you're asking. I'm you know, trying to understand the root of your question. If someone offered us, are we at a point in our career where we'll go away for 2 months? Yes, that's the answer.
Right, exactly. But to elaborate on that, we pick mini excursion tours because right now this is what we're doing, and we're in control of that. So we're not going to kill. There's no reason to kill ourselves if we don't have to. We're enjoying it. We want to be able to give the best that we can each time that we're out. We just need a little bit more rest and lubrication to keep our joints moving, and you know, but that's just the way it goes.
Yeah.
So Metal Machine, new record out now. You guys are very prolific. You release a lot of stuff. Why don't we talk about your website, your contact info, if you're more than willing to have people jump on stage with you and sing. Tell us about how all the fans get in touch with you.
You can go to our website, cornersofsanctuary.com. You can get pretty much everything that you need to know about the band there. You can link to all our social networks. We keep, you know, our Facebook page updated regularly, and that's connected to Twitter. We don't do a lot of talk back and forth on Twitter. It's just more of just an informational thing, but we will, you know, get back in touch with you, like if you contacted us through Facebook. We have a couple emails that you can get in touch with us. You can join our mailing list and get our newsletter, The Cos Nation, each month. And just, it's a brief, nice compact newsletter that just kind of gives you what's going on, what's happening, where you can catch us. We have a crowdfunding page on our website. So if you want to, you know, support the band, you can do that. And with your support, you get a really cool, depending on the tier that you pick, you get a really cool Cos package with some autographed CDs and photos and stuff like that. And
hopefully no lubrication included.
We're real accessible. I mean, we'll talk to you at the shows. I mean, you know, you want to come up and sing On the Hunt with us. Frankie loves having that stuff.
Amen.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, we're down to earth people. We'll talk to you. We'll sign whatever you want. If you need something signed, or if you would sign something for us, we'll do that too.
Awesome. We, before you were on air, we played Souls Will Shout. And now that we're closing this down, I'm going to spin In Blood We Shall Fight. Tell us a little bit about this song.
The whole album has a, there's a dual meaning. Like, you know, of course it's the idea of, you know, you're a metal machine in terms of, like, you know, you're kind of like living and breathing the metal, in a sense. But then the flip side of it is it actually does have a very, war and battle, undertone to it. So it's kind of like, In Blood We Shall Fight. It's kind of like a Viking type of song. You know, we like a lot of battle songs. So it's that kind of on the battlefield, fighting with, you know, heavy sword and shield and, you know, that kind of thing. It's fun.
Guys, thanks a lot for your time. We appreciate it. We'll keep spinning your music here on WSCA. We've been spinning it for years. You know, the EPs, we've got a few of them. Axe to Grind, we got, of course. We've been spinning Metal Machine. And I, you know, at this rate, we'll be spinning the new record in 5 or 6 months when we get a new one, right? We're going to get a new one soon, right?
You never know.
Yeah, you never know what's happening with us.
There might be one in the works right now. It might actually be under your pillow waiting for you.
Ooh. All right, guys. Thanks a lot for your time, all right?
All right. Thanks, brother.
All right.
Thanks,
take
brother.
Care. All right. Horns up.
Right, bye-bye.